Welcome to Eagle Eye View. I'm Jacob Noderman. We're very lucky to be living in the part of the country where we are because it seems as though with every step you take, you're interacting with the past. There's just so much history in Georgia and the coastal empire where we live. And not only last week did we talk about the history that lies below the surface of the water, but today we're jumping back up on top. I'm joined today by Dr. Ben Pardon. He's an assistant professor of history at Georgia Southern University. If you ever want to talk 19th century politics, abolition, Civil War, Reconstruction, slave trade, he's your guy. He's a hometown man from Georgia and recently earned his doctorate from Yale and is back in the coastal empire. Ben, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Give us a little bit of your academic background then, the areas of field where you specialize in.
Yeah, so I'm really a specialist, I suppose, in the 19th century U.S., which makes me a historian of slavery, the politics of slavery, the politics of abolition, the Civil War, Reconstruction. I happened to be really lucky when I was at Yale. I sort of fell in with a lot of friends and colleagues who were working on similar topics throughout the Atlantic world. And so I try to take a kind of Atlantic or hemispheric approach to everything that I do. And so certainly when I teach, when we discuss in class and in the research and writing that I do, I try to bring that experience to the fold as well. So that's kind of the stuff that I'm interested in.
And that's exactly why I brought you in today. It's because that era of American history is what I would like to focus on, because we have a few rather significant anniversaries, if that's the term that we can use for this one. On September 17th, it was the 160th anniversary of the Battle of Antietam. Still to this day, the deadliest day in American history, 23,000 people dead in a battle in the Civil War. And on September 22nd of that same year, just 5 days later, the announcement of the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation. When those kinds of dates come up in your mind, what sticks out to you as moments in American history for these events?
There are two moments that are linked by nature, right? Antietam leads in part to the issuing of the preliminary emancipation. But both moments, the battle and then Lincoln issuing the preliminary emancipation, sort of point in different directions and kind of speak to different degrees of importance in different areas and why they're both important, I suppose.
So they're connected, but they're pointed in different directions. What do you mean?
Well, I suppose Antietam, if we take Antietam in and of itself, strategically it was really important because it forced the Confederate Army out of the North, right? Antietam is in Maryland. It was part of the Confederate Army's invasion of the North. Antietam would be the first invasion of the North. The second would come at Gettysburg. And like Gettysburg, Antietam mattered because it forced the Confederate Army to retreating. They could have easily, if they would have won, kept marching into D.C., further north to Philadelphia, elsewhere. So from a strategic perspective, it's really important because it prolonged the war and allowed the U.S. to eventually win the war in the long run. But also Antietam's important because it was so bloody. It was a disastrous battle, incredibly bloody, incredibly violent. It led to an inordinate number of deaths. In the East, the Civil War always seemed to get the more media coverage because it was being fought between the two capitals, Richmond and D.C.
Makes sense.
It also happened to be the theater where the most kind of controversial or most interesting generals fought, right? In that Robert E. Lee, leading the Army of Northern Virginia for the Confederate Army, George McClellan for the Union Army for a while, and there's this kind of controversy over successive generals. But nonetheless, Antietam had a similar effect, but to maybe a greater degree in the sense that now there are more people writing about it. People in the East were taking notice and also taking the same lessons that were learned from Shiloh, which is that this is going to be a long war. People need to wake up to that fact and people need to prepare themselves for multiple years of this and needed to really prepare for what would ultimately be a long war.
When it comes to the Battle of Antietam, even with the 23,000 dead, it was clearly a Union advantage coming out of it. But still, both sides took devastating losses, more than 10,000 lost on both sides. So I guess my question to you is, how was it that it was a turning point so significantly when both sides took such drastic hits?
It's a turning point because at the time, the Union Army had been suffering a series of defeats. Again, this was a part of an invasion of the North into Maryland by the Confederate Army. Robert E. Lee thought that if he marched his army into Maryland, there was actually this kind of substratum of Confederate support in Maryland. They didn't find that. And then more importantly, they're defeated. And so they have to march back into Virginia, which is in part why it comes across as a victory for the North or for the Union, rather than sort of the Pyrrhic victory that it really kind of was in terms of battlefield losses. But again, in the sense that it deferred the army from the north and forced them to march, or the Confederate army, that is, back into Virginia, it's seen as a win, sort of a moment where public opinion begins to turn a little bit.
Oh, really?
Northerners, the northern electorate, begin to sort of think that maybe this war can be won. And so it's a moment where morale is high. And because of that, that's why Lincoln issues the Emancipation Proclamation, or the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation, when he does. Only his cabinet knew this at the time, but he had been preparing that document since maybe April, May, for much of 1862. He'd been talking about it and behind closed doors. But the sense was that because the army was getting beat so bad, the Union Army, that is, that if he would have announced it too soon, it would seem like a desperate plea for help, basically, or an act of desperation.
Fascinating.
And so it was decided that they would wait for a decisive victory, for morale to rise, to then release the document. And Antietam is that battle that sort of gives Lincoln and his advisors the confidence to announce the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation. So that's why the two moments are linked the way that they are.
Okay, now we all know the Emancipation Proclamation, but it's that word preliminary, sure, that may be unknown to some of our listeners. What is the difference between the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation and the actual Emancipation Proclamation itself?
Well, the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation is really kind of a threat to the Confederate Army and the Confederate government. Basically says that they will free enslaved people in the rebellious states unless the Confederate Army came to the negotiating table and basically surrendered and ended the war.
Kind of an announcement for the announcement.
Exactly, right. Lincoln gave the Confederate government till January 1st of 1863. You know, this is September, so January, time to make this decision and to come to the table. But of course, he did so knowing that that was a non-starter. It was never going to happen. But again, emancipation was not popular in the country at the time. And so this is Lincoln in part kind of reading public opinion, putting his feelers out, and trying to gauge where the general public was and what they would be willing to support. But by giving the Confederate government this option, this potential way out, it was sort of a way of Lincoln opening the door to kind of soothing the public's mind, showing that he's doing everything he can to end the war at peacefully and at as much of a status quo as possible. So that is why the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation is what it is. It's a preliminary document that would go into effect on January 1st, 1863, if the Confederate government didn't come to the negotiating table, which they didn't. It is an incredibly important document, an incredibly important moment for a number of different reasons, right? I mean, one, it is kind of the official Emancipation Proclamation that frees enslaved people. It would not abolish slavery. That would come with the 13th Amendment formally. But it is the moment where the U.S. government announces that emancipation would be an official war aim. It makes ending slavery an official part of the war. And moreover, it commits the government to that end, right? So now armies become effectively armies of liberation. It essentially a signal to enslaved people that you can begin running to the army, right? And that we will acknowledge you, your freedom, right? And so it is an incredibly powerful and important document and moment. Again, there's the provision allowing for black enlistment for the first time. That is equally as important. Black soldiers go on to play a huge role in the war, and from a manpower's perspective, it would be one of the significant factors that would tip the war in the favor of the U.S. But then if we sort of expand out even further and think geopolitically, right, the Emancipation Proclamation, and therefore Antietam, by allowing it to be issued when it does, matters because that basically ensures that the British government would not side with the Confederate Army. The British government, from a foreign policy perspective, had committed themselves to being a great anti-slavery foreign policy nation, right? That's kind of how they viewed themselves.
Because they had already abolished slavery by then, hadn't they?
They had already abolished slavery previously in the 1830s, 1833.
So not by much, but word had gotten across.
Well, essentially, but more importantly, they'd also had built a foreign policy around trying to stop other nations from engaging in the slave trade. And there was no way that they were going to basically sort of go back on their commitment to freedom as a guiding principle of British foreign policy. And so when Lincoln announces the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation, it basically tips their hand to basically say they're going to stay neutral, stay out of the war, and not support the Confederate Army. Which there was real interest in doing so, in part because those British mills that made so much money by putting out textiles relied on Confederate cotton. And the Confederate Army had a very small navy. It needed resources and supplies. It needed money. And the place they were looking to get it most was from the British.
You're clearly a very knowledgeable guy on the subject, and you love pulling on those threads to see those different vantage points. What is it about this particular era of American history that drives you then? Why pull on these threads than other decades or centuries in American history?
Well, it's the, I mean, this is sort of the field that I work in, so of course I would say this, but I think it is partly the period in that matters most, right? I mean, the 19th century as a whole is really a moment where these colossal historical forces are coming into contact with each other, right? We can think about the emergence of democracy, capitalism, of freedom, and of slavery. And so in a big, broad picture, you can see the 19th century as being really this kind of crucible for some of these foundational ideas. But then if we think about the Civil War specifically, it is of itself a similar kind of crucible for the U.S., who we become as a society. And if you look through the Civil War, you can see similar instances where what we think of as the modern U.S. is very much being born out of this moment. And so that's in part what makes it so exciting to study and to read about and to research.
You've mostly lived along the East Coast for your life, and you've been studying this era of American culture and history in these parts of the country. What is it about studying in Georgia that possibly makes it different from studying in the other states you've lived in?
Certainly, Civil War in Georgia is the state's most formative moment, historical moment, that is. I mean, it is most transformative. Followed maybe closely by the Civil Rights Movement. But if we think about the Battle of Atlanta, Sherman's march through Georgia, his taking of Savannah, right? I mean, these are colossal historical forces that have shaped the state that we live in, right? And there's a level of familiarity, proximity to that history. And it's also just kind of on the roadsides, right? I mean, we can see it on the historical markers, and in other ways as well. And so this level of proximity and familiarity kind of makes the Civil War in this part of the country so tangible in a sense, right? I mean, my grandmother's a great example. She grew up in Dalton, Georgia, right alongside a railroad track. And she can talk about, as children, one of her favorite pastimes with her cousins to go back and to find basically like mini balls, right? And artifacts from the Civil War. They were just like right in their backyard, you know? So there is a certain level of like living history to the Civil War in the South, especially, that you can't quite find anywhere else.
Well, Ben, thank you so much for swinging by today to talk to us about this.
Yeah, of course. Very happy to do it. Happy to be here.
And thank you all for listening. Be sure to tune in the next 2 weeks for another exciting edition of Eagle Eye View. You can listen to all of our previous episodes on our website at georgiasouthern.edu, or you can find us on Spotify and all your other major podcast platforms. For Eagle Eye View, I'm Jacob Noderman. Catch you next time.